Out of curiosity, is there any such thing as clean electricity that isn't harmful? That's man-made?
Well, that's a good question. To some degree, all man-made electricity is harmful. And that has been the case since we started using static electricity, as you saw in the beginning of my book, that there was harm. To some degree, that can be cleaned up. There are engineering solutions. The electromagnetic field around a wire is an unintentional field, and you can shield it. You can twist wires, and you can bury them, and you can configure them so that you can minimize the electromagnetic field coming out of it. As soon as you start putting alternating current through it, the shielding problem becomes more difficult, but not impossible. The difference between all of that and wireless technology is that suddenly we're broadcasting it deliberately over every square inch of the earth. And that is dangerous, and that cannot be fixed.
Right. It's not contained.
That's right. It's no longer contained.
So using the analogy of a fire, contained within the fireplace, it's very useful, but if it gets out, it can destroy everything.
Well, we make the analogy to a microwave oven. As long as the microwave oven is shielded and the door is shut, it's useful. You can put food in it, it'll cook it. You don't want the door open while you're cooking your food, because then it'll cook you. What a cell phone is a small microwave oven with the door open. It's an uncontained source of microwave radiation that you're putting next to your head.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into the effects, and let's start by talking about the historical connections between the rollout of each new level of electrical technology and the illnesses that erupted at the same time.
Okay. The first technology that was actually harnessed for uses outside of medicine was telegraphy, telegraph wires. And it was harnessed very quickly and in a very big way. Like millions of miles of telegraph wires were strung around the earth starting in the 1840s, 1850s, 60s, 70s. Submarine cables were laid. It went worldwide. And a new disease was started to be reported in the medical literature that they called neurasthenia. Now, we call that nowadays anxiety disorder. But from the time it was first described, which was in the 1860s, until about the turn of the 20th century, it was considered a physical disease, not a psychological disease as we think of it today. And they searched and searched and searched and searched for a cause. And it affected enormous numbers of people throughout the Western world, and it seemed to follow the courses of the telegraph wires, that whenever telegraph wires were laid, all of a sudden, in that part of the world, people would come down with neurasthenia. I make the case that this is due to exposure to electromagnetic fields. In 1889, alternating current essentially was harnessed. It was invented by Nikola Tesla, and his patents were adopted by Westinghouse, and all of a sudden we could transmit electricity long distances with little loss of power. And this was harnessed extremely rapidly, so rapidly that we went from virtually zero use of alternating current to intense use of alternating current in 1 year, and the year was 1889. 1889 was the year of the first great modern influenza epidemic, and this went worldwide, and it lasted 4 years, and it killed a couple million people, not as intense as the 1918 epidemic. We fast forward to 1918, when the United States entered World War I, and Marconi had shown the world that you could make use of radio waves and demonstrated one of the first transmissions of it 20 years before. But when the United States entered World War I, we made intensive use of radio technology for the first time as part of our war effort. And after World War I is when the development of commercial radio began. I make the case in the book that the Spanish influenza epidemic was caused by the sudden change in the Earth's electromagnetic environment by the worldwide use of radio for the first time. And the next big...
Before we get to that, how close were they related time-wise, the Spanish influenza epidemic and the implementing of radio technology?
Extremely close. The Spanish influenza began in American bases in this country where soldiers were trained in the use of radio waves. And the installation of the most powerful alternator, 50,000-watt alternator in New Jersey, by the United States for use in communicating overseas, occurred in September of 2018, which is exactly when the Spanish influenza epidemic became so deadly.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
Continue with the historical progression.
1957 and 58 was the erection of incredibly powerful civil defense radar stations, again, by the United States, from coast to coast and throughout Canada and Alaska and into the oceans and on airplanes. And that also coincided with the next epidemic of influenza. In 1968 was the first launch of military satellites, and in fact, pretty much the first launch of satellites, period. There was Sputnik, there was a few isolated satellites. In 1968, in one fell swoop, we doubled the number of satellites in the sky, and that coincided with the Hong Kong flu of 1968. Now, people will be resistant to the idea that influenza is not an infectious disease, but this is why I spend two whole chapters on it in my book. Even back in the deadliest epidemic, practically, that has ever occurred in history, which is the 1918 Spanish influenza, there were heroic efforts to try to demonstrate the infectious nature of this disease. Doctors in various universities recruited hundreds of healthy people and brought them to the bedside of the sickest influenza patients and tried to infect them, by collecting secretions and mucus and throat swabbings from very sick people and had healthy people swallow it, put it in their eyes, put it up their nose, inject people with sick people's blood. They were totally unable to infect a single healthy person with influenza from sick people during the deadliest epidemic this world has ever known. The same thing was tried in horses. Influenza affects horses. So they tried to infect healthy horses with the secretions from sick horses. Also failed. So it's fascinating. Some of the old scientific reports make entertaining reading, shall I say. But the existence of an influenza virus is well established, but the relationship between the virus and the disease is actually in question. And the relationship between influenza and electricity is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us up to today. And there's the wireless revolution.
Right, right.
Which is really the impetus for writing my book, because I'm the president of the Cellular Phone Task Force. We were formed in 1996 when digital cell phone technology came to the United States. And the impetus for my helping to start this is my own injury by electromagnetic energy back when I was in medical school, which is what prevented me from finishing my fourth year. So I already was studying this since the year 1980, and I lived in New York City, and I had a support group, namely of other people who were injured either by chemicals or electricity. And when we saw what was coming, namely the wireless revolution, something had to be done about it. So I started this organization. And I learned pretty quickly, number one, people didn't want to hear about it. Number two, politicians didn't want to hear about it. Number three, judges didn't want to hear about it. The FCC didn't want to hear about it. In other words, political action on this particular environmental issue was not going to get us very far by itself. And I quickly realized that the public needed to be educated.
Well, you wrote that Congress passed a law in 1996 that made it illegal to regulate wireless technology on the basis of health.
That is amazing, and that is correct. Yes, the Telecommunications Act of 1996 actually says that states and cities may not regulate wireless technology on the basis of health, that this is completely up to the FCC, and if the FCC permits it, it has to be permitted by your city and your state.
So why would Congress do that? Why would politicians get on board with such a ludicrous notion?
Well, actually, it almost wasn't that way. This was due to the machinations of the telecommunications industry. In 1995, the Environmental Protection Agency drafted its own regulations, which would have been mandatory throughout the United States and would not have preempted anybody from regulating this. And they were set to release them. The Telecommunications Industry Association, I think it was actually the PCIA, the Personal Communications Industry Association, lobbied Congress to prohibit the Environmental Protection Agency from regulating wireless technology, took away all of their funding for their regulatory activity, and awarded exclusive authority over health to the Federal Communications Commission, which has no expertise whatsoever in health and safety. And the Telecommunications Act of 1996 originally did not have that provision in it, but it went into committee. I think it was a House Commerce Committee back in June or July of 1995, and when it came out of committee, it had this little sentence in there: no state or local government or instrumentality thereof may regulate the environmental effects of radio frequency radiation to the effect that it complies with the Federal Communications Commission's regulations. And it doesn't even say health. It says environmental effects. So I seriously doubt that any of the congressmen who voted on this bill knew that they were prohibiting states and cities from protecting their health of their citizens. But it passed, and President Clinton signed it, and this has been a stumbling block for people all over the country since 1996, not only from stopping cell towers from appearing everywhere, but even from going to their city councils and talking about health. Because if you talk about health, the next sentence of the Telecommunications Act says that the telecommunication company can sue the city. So everybody has been silenced. Scientists have been silenced. There have been thousands of studies saying this stuff is harmful. But even if you are a scientist, you can't go to your city council and say, hey, this is harmful, don't put it up. You can't even talk about it.
So is there much hope for changing that legislation?
Well, I think not until the public is educated. I think judges will not stick their necks out at this point. Everybody's on their cell phones. Everybody's addicted to the technology. This is the multi-trillion-dollar industry. It's probably the wealthiest industry in the world. No judge is going to stand up against this industry until the public is on their side. No legislator is going to stand up to the industry until the public is on their side. It all has to happen together.
So the public has to demand it.
Correct. The public not only has to demand it, but the public has to realize what they're doing to themselves. The public has to realize it, and I have a chapter on cancer. I have a chapter on diabetes. I have a chapter on heart disease. The public has to wake up to the fact that most of the cancer, diabetes, and heart disease that we have in our world is being caused by wireless technology, and specifically by your cell phone.